Listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Regional leaders are meeting in Cairo discussing the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, even as trucks carrying aid supplies have started to arrive in the Gaza Strip through the Rafah border crossing in Egypt. Iraq's prime minister at the Cairo Peace Summit spoke out about the suffering of the Palestinian people. The BBC's Tom Bateman is in Egypt, where he describes a desperate situation among civilians at the Rafah gate.
The need to transfer the goods from the Egyptian lorries to the Palestinian ones. We've seen the Egyptian lorries going in and some trucks coming back empty. They've moved off the containers, so they're making progress. It's absolutely been the Israeli position that they won't agree to any fuel going in. They cut off fuel supplies, importantly, to the only power station in Gaza. So that went out days ago. There's been a blackout now for about 9 or 10 days. Yeah, that's Israeli concern that fuel could be stolen, exploited by Hamas. But the problem with that is that fuel is desperately needed in the hospitals. They're all running on generators, those that are left still functioning.
The movement of humanitarian aid into Gaza comes less than a day after two Americans, Judith and Natalie Renan, became the first hostages to be released by Hamas. CBS's Christina Ruffini on how that unfolded.
The nation of Qatar, which hosts a Hamas political office, helped facilitate the negotiations. The women were then handed over to the International Red Cross Red Crescent, which took them from inside Gaza to the Israeli border, where they were greeted by an IDF general.
This is a small joy in our family, but hopefully for all the other hostages and all the other families, just keep praying and hopefully good news will come.
The two Americans, a mother and a daughter, had been visiting a kibbutz in Israel when it was overrun by Hamas on October 7th. Former Trump attorney Kenneth Chesbrough pleaded guilty in the Georgia election interference case. Loyola Law Professor Lori Levinson on the plea deal.
Overall, you have to put this down as a good week for the prosecutors because two key defendants have pled guilty. And the prosecutors have not had to show their full hand in the cases likely coming down the pike against Donald Trump and other defendants.
Former Trump attorney Sidney Powell pleaded guilty on Thursday. Chesbrough was sentenced to 5 years probation, 100 hours of community service, and ordered to pay $5,000 in restitution. In New York, the former president was fined $5,000 and threatened with jail time in his business fraud case for violating a gag order.
The judge said a social media post attacking the judge's clerk remained visible on Trump's campaign website more than 2 weeks after he was ordered to take it down.
That's CBS's Nora O'Donnell with that report. And this is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
on a regular basis on this station and other broadcast stations around the nation. Just this past week, again, some major developments in that area. Most notably, let's begin with this. Let's begin with the phrase, a beacon to the world, a beacon to the world. Again, invoking rule of law, justice, and government issues. That was our president, the President of the United States of America, Joe Biden, talking on Thursday night, encouraging all Americans, consistent with those fundamental principles of rule of law and justice, even in the midst of something as catastrophic, destructive, the human tragedy that is war, talking and encouraging Americans to stand firmly behind Israel and also Ukraine, and drawing those important lines of connection between those two places of armed conflict, again, both places of human disaster and tragedy. He makes the emphatic case in that primetime address, only a second from the Oval Office, that the United States remains this beacon to the world, a beacon to the world whose leadership, he said, is vital to stopping the death and destruction by the enemies of democracy. And again, his entire speech, his entire presentation focused upon the notion that it is through the rule of law and the administration of justice and the establishment and maintenance of the basic trappings of decency when it comes to treating each other in ways that are appropriate, consistent with basic social norms, all of that a part of what the president described as a beacon to the world. And so we begin with our portion here this morning, Undiscovered Justice, chatting about other stories coming out of the Middle East, and all of them, again, in the midst of this disastrous situation, some small, modest items of good news. We heard just yesterday, of course, that two Americans who were held captive in Gaza by Hamas, again, this terrorist organization identified by our government that started this latest conflict. A woman and her teenage daughter released on Friday, two weeks after they were taken hostage, along with about 200 other people believed also to be in custody, abducted, kidnapped by Hamas during the course of those terrorist raids in southern Israel that ignited this war, that also, as I indicated before, as you know well, leaving thousands of people dead on both sides. Hamas said it was freeing, and indeed they have been freed, Judith Renan, 59, and her daughter Natalie Renan, 17, for humanitarian reasons. That's what Hamas explained, justified their release. The release came after, again, as we are now learning, some extended negotiations of officials in Qatar who served as mediators between the United States and Hamas. We, of course, do not have direct relations with Hamas, this terrorist organization. But because of those engagements in Qatar, today we know that Judith Renan and her daughter Natalie are being released. Both of them, dual Israeli-American citizens, they live in Illinois, about 100 miles or so from where we're broadcasting just this morning. They had been kidnapped, by all reports, from a kibbutz in the northern part of Gaza, actually in Israel itself, on October 7th, those Hamas attacks in Israel that killed several thousand people, and they were taken back to the Gaza Strip. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this major issue having to do with the release of these hostages and other matters related to undiscovered justice coming out of the terrorist war zone that we call the Middle East today. Stay with us for that discussion right after this first break.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, chance of rain, partly sunny, highs near 56. Tonight, some fog possible, otherwise mostly cloudy, and lows in the mid-30s. For Sunday, mostly sunny, mid-50s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 43. Monday, around 57 with a chance of rain.
Currently, 46 degrees.
We are back here in Morning Cannolis. Thank you for once again joining me on this Saturday, October 21st, 2023. We're right in the midst right now of a portion of our program this morning. We're calling Undiscovered Justice, talking about some of the significant stories coming out of the Middle East and the war there, the Israeli-Hamas war. And right before the break, talking in particular about a bit of good news, hopefully the beginning of more good news related to the many, many hostages, those abducted during the course of the terrorist raids in southern Israel of about a couple of weeks or so ago, the release of Judith Renan and her daughter, Natalie Renan. And they significantly also have a significant Midwestern connection. Both of them born in Israel. Judith Renan, born in Israel, spent her early life there before settling, yes, in the Chicago suburb of Evanston, Illinois, not too far from where we are right here in beautiful Madison. She raised a family there. Natalie Renan also lived in Israel as a child, graduated from public schools in Deerfield, Illinois, near Chicago. Again, Midwesterners there as a part of the celebration of an 85th birthday of Judith's mother at this kibbutz in the south of the Israeli nation. Released today, anticipating with hope the release of more of the hostages, those people abducted during the course of the raids of 2 weeks ago, a component of the human tragedy that is war there. We also know, of course, that as of just today, it is, by the way, about 5:22 in the afternoon there in Israel. And we heard earlier today, coming out of the Israeli government and certainly reporting from Gaza as well, that finally, some first aid trucks are moving through the crossing of the southern border of Gaza into Egypt, moving through that crossing into Gaza to provide some much needed humanitarian aid, some life-saving supplies, which is, as the World Health Organization is describing that, a warning that this particular delivery barely begins to address the escalating health needs in Gaza that are indeed profound. Reporting, again, as a part of the important support of human beings to return to some sense of decency and humanitarian support. There are kind of about 20 trucks this morning carrying aid moving through the Rafah border, crossing into Gaza from Egypt Saturday. According to the United Nations, after weeks, days of diplomatic wrangling to make that happen, to get food, water, medicine into those blockaded enclaves where supplies running desperately low, people suffering dramatically. I raised the issue this morning and note it with particularity, again, because it is a bit of good news, even though it is only a start of a much larger effort that needs to be pursued to ensure that people are alive and supported there in Gaza, putting aside the genesis of this war, the other long-standing conflicts that prompt the continuing hostilities there, humanitarian needs. That's what the rule of law is also all about. That's what justice is all about. Social justice, cultural justice, economic justice, humanitarian justice being accomplished in a small, modest way, hopefully more of that. When I was in Iraq for 2 years, 2006 to 2008, we saw both of these things in great numbers. That is the taking of hostages and the great profound difficulties of returning them, the diplomatic issues mostly engaged in by the State Department, by the ambassador, to try to seek the return, yes, of Americans, but of anyone who is held in a hostage-type situation. The great skill that it takes to engage with parties who plainly have interests other than those of our side, if you will, the government of the United States of America and allied governments there in Iraq, the profound issues related to restoring some humanity, obtaining agreements for the return of hostages that we've begun to see yesterday, and also much related to that, in the midst of a war, 2006, 2008, in the midst of the horrific Iraqi war, involved that is in many ways a civil war involving a number of different groups, not just the United States and its coalition forces against Al-Qaeda, others who would undermine the safety and security of the emerging Iraqi nation at that time, but also in the midst of that, recognizing the huge humanitarian needs of health care and food and safety and security and housing and all the other things that likewise go along with a proper and appropriate system of social justice. That too, the significance of this morning as that begins to happen in Israel and Gaza as that movement takes place. Airstrikes in southwestern Gaza, as you know, have displaced some around 16,000 people. They fled to shelters run by the United Nations, which is one of the agencies, of course, much involved in that location there. More than half of those particular shelters are in Rafah, which is, again, the site of the movement of this humanitarian need from Egypt into Gaza. The southernmost of Gaza's five provinces, and the city of Rafah, which is on the border, once again, of Egypt, is the capital there. About 380,000 people were at some of those shelters in southern Gaza, even to this day, presumably now getting a bit of humanitarian need, as the UN has said, barely beginning to address the escalating health needs in Gaza, the profound continuing needs of the people who are there. Two stories related to some marginally good, with a very small g, marginally good news coming out of the Middle East. We hope for more of that, the return of more hostages, people abducted, and the restoration of some of the basic humanitarian needs that are there on a regular basis. And then finally, another story very close to home for me as I observe and consume, as you do, much of the information, the news coming out of that location has to do with a special assignment of someone with whom I worked when I was in Iraq, the White House announcing last Sunday the appointment of a fellow named David Satterfield, who's a former U.S. ambassador to Turkey, former deputy chief of mission in Iraq, to serve as a special envoy for Middle East humanitarian issues. David Satterfield, my boss in the first months that I was in Iraq, 2006 to 2008, a good guy, a good government person, out of retirement to address these issues of humanitarian needs there, a reason to be celebrating, and again, with a small c, the appointment of somebody who will make this work, make this happen. David Satterfield, great admiration for him, great admiration for the work that he will do in that important setting. When we come back, more issues related to the rule of law, justice, and government here in America and other places around our world. Stay with us for that discussion.
CBS News Special Report. Trucks carrying humanitarian aid crossing into Gaza. The BBC's Debbie Ross reports.
20 truckloads of aid have crossed into the Gaza Strip through the Rafah checkpoint on the Egyptian border. They're the first humanitarian supplies allowed to enter since Israel tightened its blockade of the territory 2 weeks ago.
But first, the trucks are being inspected.
The UN certainly is present there, so they may want to carry out those inspections. And then, this is all going to take time because they've got to get the stuff into Palestinian lorries so that it can then be distributed.
The BBC's Tom Bateman. The aid comes as regional leaders are attending the Cairo Peace Summit.
We're now calling for, and what we have been calling for a few days,
is to lift the total siege that has been imposed on Gaza for now almost 2 weeks.
She is with the UN Relief and Works Agency for the Palestinians. CBS News Special Report. I'm Linda Kenyon.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over. If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs. But it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
93.5, The Tap.
Up US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different.
And we are back here for the third segment in our first hour here at Morning Cannolis. Thank you for once again being with me on this beautiful Saturday morning. The state of Wisconsin and the United States of America, as always, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. Also taking your texts, your messages, your written comments and questions. And boy, we've been delighted to get some already this morning from Linda. Thank you, Linda, so much for writing in. You've raised a question also we're going to get to, having to do with some exposure in the possible prosecution of other people coming out of some of these pieces of litigation involving our former President Donald Trump. Linda, we appreciate your comments and being a part of our broadcast this morning. Appreciate all those kinds of comments. My wonderful executive producer, Luke, and I taking those from you and hopefully responding to the questions that you may have, about the things that we are chatting about in the wake of our initial segments. Again, undiscovered justice, but actually discovered justice, some bits of positive good news, encouraging more of that in the war-torn, catastrophic area that we now know as the Middle East. I'm going to turn now back to the United States of America and get once again into the topics that we have discussed with great particularity in past broadcasts. We're going to talk about 3 or 4 different major cases in which our former president is involved and in which the judges just this past week have undertaken to do significant things in federal and state courts. Let's get right into that. Again, always soliciting your thoughts and comments on these important rule of law and justice issues. You recall well from not only your consumption of the national news, even the international news, that Donald Trump has been federally indicted in two different venues, two different major indictments. And I think probably most people regard the so-called January 6th election interference indictment, that one perhaps at the top of the list, because that is the one that goes to the integrity of our system of justice in America. This is the lawsuit. This is the criminal prosecution returned by a federal grand jury in the District of Columbia, being presided over by Judge Tanya Chutkan. She is a U.S. District Court judge, wonderful history, knows what she's doing based upon her prior experience and her experience on the bench as well. She is presiding over this case in which Donald Trump is the singular defendant. He is the only defendant charged in this case. And he is charged with four different counts, basically obstruction obstruction of our basic rule of law principles when it comes to the counting of votes, attempt to interfere, the violation of civil rights in the attempt to undermine the effect of your votes. Four different counts. They're all felony counts. Singular indictment there against a singular defendant named Donald Trump. We know significantly that in that indictment, the indictment returned by the grand jury, overseen now being prosecuted by the attorneys who are the affiliates of Jack Smith, a special counsel, again, a federal employee. We know that there are six other people identified in that grand jury indictment, not by name, but we know who their names are. And yes, we're going to spend some time talking about at least two, if not more, of them this morning. Their names: Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, Jeffrey Clark, Boris Epstein, and yes, Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbro. Keep those names in mind, because as we talk in this segment and future segments here on Morning Cannolis, we're going to chat a lot about those two in connection with the Georgia case, not the federal case, because while all those people have been identified in the federal case, the January 6th election interference case, none of them named with particularity, none of them charged. They're all unindicted co-conspirators. And it may well be that after the prosecution of this case, singular defendant, Donald Trump, four counts, it may well be that Jack Smith is going to indict these others and may also indict others involved in the attempt to undermine the proper results of the 2020 election, including fake electors. We've talked a lot about that here in the state of Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Georgia, other places around the country. We'll get back to that as well. What happened just this past week in terms of the administration of this singular defendant, four-count indictment against Donald Trump being presided over by Tanya Chutkan, the U.S. District Court judge in Washington, D.C. Well, just this past week, the judge there, Tanya Chutkan, imposed what's being called a limited gag order on the former president, restricting him from making public statements attacking who? Attacking the witnesses and specific prosecutors or court staff members involved in this federal case. She said he can't do that anymore. And again, that's a fundamental notion that applies to any defendant in any case, federal or state. Any case should be including those kinds of restrictions on the conduct, not only of a defendant, but also her or his counsel as well. Tanya Chutkan said this, and again, this comes in the wake of the former president's commenting and attacking verbally, name-calling witnesses, specific prosecutors, court staff members, all of those things on Truth Social and in other environments publicly. Here's what Tanya Chutkan said when she said, "You can't do that anymore. I am specifically directing you not to do that. And if you run afoul of this directive, I'm going to take further action." We'll talk about more of that in just a moment or so. She said this: "The free speech rights of this defendant, Donald Trump, do not permit him to launch a pretrial smear campaign against these people." She said, "No other defendant would be allowed to do so in my court. I'm not going to allow it in this particular case." Interestingly, she narrowed this fairly closely to things that the president has done, said you can't do those kinds of things, can't affect justice. Why? Because according to the special counsel, Jack Smith, and according to the fundamental trappings of the rule of law, these kinds of things could have a direct impact upon the results in this prosecution, going to trial, presumably under Judge Chutkan, sometime in early 2024. If that happens, we'll see. We'll see. She's got it scheduled right now for that kind of proceeding. Concern about the legitimacy of that case. And that's what she's focusing on when she says you can't engage with witnesses. You can't be calling them names. You can't be calling people who are prosecutors, court staff members, names in the public domain. All of that has an impact not only upon the witnesses and therefore the administration of justice, but also has a dramatic impact upon jurors who will be coming in. Right now, plainly, the nation knows about these kinds of lawsuits and presumably knows about this prosecution in particular. Doesn't want to taint the potential jury pool that's going to be coming in sometime in early 2024. Among that group, presumably hundreds of people coming in from the D.C. area, potential jurors already reading the news, consuming the news electronically in paper format, all those kinds of things. Don't affect that. Do not have any impact upon that, Tanya Chutkan is saying. And don't you dare do that. And basically telling him that he's got to knock it off. She also addressed a particularly thorny question, one involving the former president, Mike Pence, who also happens, as you know well, to be a candidate for the United States presidency. He's both a witness in this case. Why? Because he is one of the central figures, plainly not only on January 6th, but plainly had a lot of conversations with the defendant, Donald Trump, leading up to January 6th, even after that. Lots of things that we know he said in both directions, he to the president, the former president to him, lots of things that make him a witness. And he's also, of course, again, a rival for Donald Trump to the 2024 Republican nomination. She also said that Donald Trump could go after Mr. Pence as a co-campaigner, if you will, in that rush for the nomination, as long as his attacks did not touch on his role in the criminal prosecution. In other words, if you begin to talk about Mike Pence as a witness and the things that he may say, that you can't do, and that I'm going to respond to. And that raises the significant question, what do you do about this if indeed he violates? An awful lot of people believe that Donald Trump will not be able to abide by this limited gag order imposed by Judge Chutkan. We will see. How does she go about enforcing this order? Well, she's got a couple of options here. We're going to talk about how these options do, in fact, play out right now in the state and federal courts in our country. She said she would assess any consequences for Donald Trump if and when he violates it. And what are those possible consequences? What is in the quiver, if you will, of things that Judge Chutkan could and should do if indeed there are violations of her order? She could do everything from a reprimand, oral reprimand, could issue an order reprimanding him as well. She could fine him, and keep that in mind as well, could fine him too, a monetary amount, a monetary penalty sanctioning him for his behavior. And also could, yes, that's right, could jail him as well. Contempt of court could happen in a civil case, a criminal case. We'll talk more about that, too, in just a moment or so. Because you have violated the directives of the presiding judge, that is contempt. And especially if it happens right in the presence of the court, that kind of contempt can land you in jail. And we'll talk about circumstances where that potentially could happen and actually has happened for another defendant recently in another federal court. In New York right now. Those are the options before Tanya Chutkan right now. She has this two-hour hearing, and it's one of the most contentious public proceedings so far. Happened last Monday, and prompts Donald Trump right after this happens to say this. He says, they put a gag order on me. I'm not supposed to be talking about things that bad people do. And so we'll be appealing that very quickly. And yes, he's got a right to do what's called an interlocutory appeal while all this is pending, even before the trial has started. You can appeal that. He said this at a campaign stop in Iowa on Monday, right after the judge imposed this order. He said, I'll be the only politician in history where I won't be allowed to criticize people. Well, that simply is not true. That simply is not true. And again, according to the judge, not in any way affecting his First Amendment rights to be a candidate for the presidency, made that very clear. But drawing this line, which is understandable, it is understandable. It's not a gray line. It's a clear line. It's a bright line. You can talk about things related to the campaign. You can criticize, she said, you can criticize your opponents, including the president, Joe Biden. You can criticize your other person who is trying to likewise get the nomination, his name, of course, Mike Pence. You can do all of that as a part of your advocacy. What you can't do is criticize the witnesses, talk about them by name, single them out, not only for name calling, but also criticism that will have an impact. That's what this is all about. As we have said before many times on this broadcast, there is no right in America, no right in America, including the First Amendment. I will hasten to add also the Second Amendment that is unconditional. No, you don't have an unconditional right to exercise those specific things, those privileges set forth in our Bill of Rights and in other statutes, and even in the Wisconsin statute. All of them are conditioned upon what? The notion that we live in a society of people and we live together, and because of that, we necessarily make limitations on things like our freedom of speech, our freedom to assemble, our freedom to advocate. All of that is not completely free for everyone under every circumstance, every time. It includes understandings about limitation. That's what Tanya Chutkan was instructing us all on this past Monday. That is the issue that Donald Trump may not yet understand. And in that connection, let's now move to another case in which apparently Donald Trump did not understand another gag order imposed upon him in another case. This is the second case. This happens to be the civil fraud trial. Again, it's not a criminal matter, and it's not pending in federal court. It's pending in the New York State Court. Again, New York State, a New York civil prosecution brought by the Attorney General of the state of New York. We have talked about this a lot on this broadcast. And she has brought this major sweeping charge, this set of civil charges against Donald Trump, two of his children, and others involved in the Trump Organization, alleging improper valuations of property, apartment buildings, real estate, all kinds of things, seeking a based upon those violations of New York law, seeking about $250 million against him in fines and penalties under New York civil law, and also seeking an order from the judge directing that Donald Trump and his sons can never again be a part of a corporation, any sort of company commissioned by the state of New York. That's what she is requesting. And as a part of that, the judge, and his name is Arthur Engoron, E-N-G-O-R-O-N. He's a very colorful fellow, a lot in the news also. Just yesterday, he previously was in the news because what did he do? He made a finding that as a matter of law, as we have discussed, entered this order for summary judgment, finding that as a matter of law, there had been fraud committed, and now entertaining these claims for about how much money should be imposed upon Donald Trump and the organization. That's the trial that's going on right now. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk with you about what Judge Engoron did in connection with another gag order that he previously imposed upon Donald Trump. The question is, did Donald Trump abide by it? What do you think? We'll talk about that right after this break.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs. But it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
93.5, The Tap.
Up US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, chance of rain, partly sunny, highs near 56. Tonight, some fog possible, otherwise mostly cloudy, and lows in the mid-30s. For Sunday, mostly sunny, mid-50s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 43. Monday, around 57 with a chance of rain.
It's 48 at our studios.
Back for this, our final segment of this first hour, the first hour here on Morning Cannolis on Saturday, October 21st. Thank you once again for joining my wonderful executive producer, Luke Mathers, and me here. We're in the studios right here in beautiful downtown Madison, enjoying this venue tremendously, enjoying your listening to this program as always, and inviting you to call in at 844-967-2789. Also sending us your comments, your questions, through the various mechanisms of social media and through the Civic Media app, do that and be involved in our discussion this morning. Right before the break, we were talking about gag orders, a phrase that, frankly, I don't especially like just because it suggests that you're imposing upon a defendant in a criminal. It could also be a civil case, something that's inappropriate, gagging someone. Well, now what you're doing is you're exercising as the judge appropriate administrative supervisory responsibilities, ensuring that the integrity of the proceeding is protected. We talked about this gag order imposed by Judge Tanya Chutkan. This order that basically follows the First Amendment says you can't go out there and be talking, criticizing, name-calling people involved in the criminal justice system or involved in your case. Also, an issue coming out of this civil prosecution by the State Attorney General in New York, right down the street, that case happening, of other matters also in New York. This one, again, in the civil court being presided over by Judge Arthur Engoron, a very colorful person. In the trial's opening days a couple of weeks ago, again, this is focusing upon these allegations of fraud. The judge has already found, as a matter of law and fact, that Donald Trump engaged in this kind of fraud. In the opening days of the trial, he barred Donald Trump from attacking his court staff after the former president did what? He posted a social media on his social media site, his Truth Social site. He posted a picture of the judge's law clerk. Her name is Allison Greenfield. We know that because it's in the public domain. Normally, law clerk's not a part of the public domain, but she has become a part of this story, inappropriately and sadly. And the picture showed Allison Greenfield, the judge's law clerk, with Senator Chuck Schumer, of course, is a majority leader in the United States Senate. It was one of these pictures that politicians take all the time, probably thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of them taken, especially with Chuck Schumer. Allison Greenfield, at some point in the past, appears with the majority leader. Donald Trump labels Allison Greenfield Schumer's girlfriend and posts that on his social media site and said she was running this case against me. That's the kind of thing that will get the attention of the judge. And sure enough, it did. The judge specifically identified that as a reason to impose, again, an order against the judge from posting these kinds of things on his social media site. Again, this involving the court staff making a completely unfounded, this is just plain made up. No notion whatsoever that there is any truth to this whatsoever, and suggesting once again that somehow he is not getting justice. Well, what happened was, of course, there's this order directing him to take that down, to abide by the basic understandings of what's got to happen here. And in the wake of that, it turns out that while some of this did come down, the reality is that there was still a version of it that remained up on the former president's website, his basic website for his campaign. This comes to the attention of Judge Engoron, who is not happy. And yesterday morning has a very volatile hearing with the lawyers for Donald Trump and certainly the lawyers for the prosecution, for the civil prosecution coming out of Letitia James' office. And during the course of that, the attorneys for Donald Trump apologize that this failure to remove has come to the attention of the court, apologizes on behalf of Donald Trump. It should have gone down. The judge is not at all happy about this. And again, he indicates that he is going to pursue the kinds of options that he's got, including reprimands, including oral reprimands, a written reprimand, issuing an order, fining, and also potentially jail. And so most of the day, the judge is pondering what he's going to do when Donald Trump has violated the order imposed upon him a couple of weeks ago to stop him, to tell him he can't be engaged in this kind of behavior. He has violated it, whether it's inadvertent or not. The judge says, in the current overheated climate, incendiary untruths, which is what this is, can in some cases, and already have, led to serious physical harm and worse. And he says that personal attacks on his staff are unacceptable. He would not tolerate them under any circumstances, forbidding posts and emails and public remarks about his staff members, adding that serious punishments would follow if he was disobeyed. Again, parallels to what's happening in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., down the coast there. This one percolating up yesterday. In the wake of that, what happens? We get word late yesterday that the judge, again, quite angry about what has happened here because of what Donald Trump has done. Again, not finding that there is any specific entry of judgment about the damages amount, but the judge selects one of those remedies. The first time in our nation's history in which a judge has imposed this kind of contempt judgment, this contempt citation against a former president. What does Judge Engoron do? He imposes a $5,000 fine on Donald Trump yesterday afternoon for what he describes as a blatant violation of the order previously imposed earlier this month. That is significant news. That is rule of law. That's justice. That's government. That is the judicial system at work here in the United States of America. These orders related to the conduct of parties are not insignificant. And although they may be fall as footnotes for the national media, they're not footnotes for America. And they require adherence by everybody who's involved in these pieces of litigation, civil and criminal, whether you are a prosecutor, whether you're a witness, you are a defense counsel, you are a defendant in the matter. All of those things, all of those parties have necessarily got to follow the requirements of the law as the court establishes them. That's why these issues are so very, very important. One final note as we go into our first break here, and that is we talked before about the Mar-a-Lago case just this past week. In that particular case, Walt Nauta, who is one of the co-defendants of Donald Trump, told the judge there, this Eileen Cannon, that he understood some potential conflicts that his lawyer, this fellow named Stanley Woodward, has with his previous and current representations of other people. The government had brought this to the attention of the judge, Eileen Cannon, there. We talked about this last week. Well, just in the past couple of days, Walt Nauta had said he doesn't care about that. He still wants Woodward to represent him in this case. And presumably we're going to get an order sometime soon from Judge Eileen Cannon about all this. Doesn't completely remove the conflicts problem. Again, this is a lawyer, this fellow named Stanley Woodward, who previously represented another person who's now testifying, presumably, in that trial. This is the documents case. His name is Yusil Taveras. He's going to come in and talk about obstruction of justice. So the issues related to that particular conflict of interest remain. We'll see what the judge does with that coming out of Mar-a-Lago. Another significant event by, this case, a federal judge in the U.S. District Court in Florida. When we come back, we're going to not only take calls and comments from some of you, but also move on to other issues related to these many pieces of litigation pending right now in the courts of America. Stay with us for Hour 2 on Morning Cannolis.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W22 80 P. Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.